Inoho, please be seated. I now call Mr. Matthew William Tooze back to the witness box. Good afternoon, Matthew.
Can you stand up? Okay, go.
Can you please confirm your full name is Matthew William Tooze?
That's correct.
And you are, back to one of your other briefs. Are you currently the technical director for planning at Harrison Grierson Limited?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, you've prepared, I think it's three briefs of evidence from memory.
That's correct.
Two
yes.
You have previously confirmed, but the current one was a supplementary brief of evidence dated 12 May 2021.
Yes.
Did you have any amendments that you wished to make to that brief of evidence?
No, I don't.
Can you please then confirm that that brief of evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. Now, I don't have any further questions for Mr. Tooze at this point, so I'll leave you with my friends.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good afternoon. I want to start with paragraph 7 of your most recent evidence. And there you are giving an opinion in relation to whether your proposed RDA rule and the consequential amendments you propose are achieving the objective as it at least was framed up at the point in time you wrote this evidence.
Yeah.
And you conclude paragraph 7 by noting that these provisions provide for an efficient and timely transition toward the long-term sustainable management of freshwater in the Otago region under a new land and water plan. I'm interested in understanding your thinking in relation to how that transition is being achieved by the granting of, in this context, consents with a 15-year duration.
Yes, thank you. So the first up is that the 15-year duration is time-bound to the life of this new land and water plan. And the second component of this, well, actually there's two further components, Mr. Moore. First up is that the proposed rules package for community water supplies is all-encompassing. So it includes the three matters under the objective. All takes and uses of fresh water, any deemed permits, if there were any related to water, and also renewals.
So just so I've understood what your new framework or proposed framework is seeking to achieve, have I understood correctly that you are seeking to have this Chapter 10 regulate all applications for community water supplies, including both replacement of water permits and deemed permits?
Yes, that's correct. And that, as I just mentioned before, that comes back to the three factors under the objective, either version, actually.
And just to be clear, it would also apply to all new applications for community water supplies?
Yes, that's correct.
And when you think about the submissions that were lodged by the various TAs, did any of those submissions seek that Plan Change 7 apply exclusively to community water supplies?
Their submissions were on a continuum, so definitely not with the likes of Dunedin City and Queenstown, where it was a conditional support with specific changes. At the other end of the spectrum were Clutha, Waitaki, and Central Otago. And bearing in mind that the submissions weren't drafted as I could see it from my legal counsel or planners, but they were stating an objection to PC7. So to my way of thinking, that there is scope within that to work new provisions in that essentially addresses the concerns that the TAs had. And a number of the submissions from TAs then went further and explained what their specific issues were.
So, in your mind at least, the scope for inclusion of all applications, all new applications, arises as a consequence of issues raised in predominantly the submissions of CODC and Clutha.
Yes, that's correct. And I haven't looked across the full span of all submissions to PC7. There may be others. I'm not aware of that.
When you think about the possibility then of an application, so a new application being lodged for a community water supply, and that application being considered exclusively through the lens of Chapter 10, is there a risk that Chapter 10 has simply insufficient machinery in it to inform decision making under a restricted discretionary activity?
Not in the context of the changes that I've proposed, because they do bring in new considerations around efficiency, effectiveness of the water supply, principally through water management plan and the various sub-criteria attached to that.
Now, we will spend some time on the provisions that you've recommended, but do those provisions require an assessment of effects, ecological effects on water bodies from which water is abstracted?
A take of water, a new take of water, may also coincide with other applications for water permits, stream works, for example, either under the other provisions in the water plan or under the freshwater management NES, which would address those matters.
So your provisions in the context of the application for the take and use of water for community water supplies, that application doesn't require an assessment of the effects, ecological effects on the water body from which the water is abstracted?
Not as currently worded.
So when you think about that, and you think about the types of assessments that would ordinarily be made when abstracting water from a water body, except that the ecological effects are typically considered with the take of water from a water body?
Well, yes they are, and I think this will come down to the actual structure of PC7. So what I think strongly influenced me in the drafting of this was the various discussions around the scope and intent of PC7 being a process-driven plan change. Having said that, if the court was minded, to adopt a provision like this, and two, to introduce ecological provisions, then the drafting of that would be fairly straightforward with, in this case, a cross-reference back to the matters for consideration under 12.4.1.8, I think, from 12.1.4.8, which are the existing RDA matters of discretion, which do include the full suite of considerations for ecological and environmental effects.
Well, haven't you given evidence that the current operative planning provisions are not fit for purpose in terms of the relevant considerations?
In terms of the policy approach, in terms of the yes, I have, but if there was needed to be an inclusion of environmental or ecological considerations, then that could be addressed through a cross reference, because if you put these provisions to one side and discard them, then you are reliant on the existing provisions, albeit subject to PC7 solely with regard to duration. So it kind of circles back to the same spot.
And it's that duration which is the key driver for ensuring that the outcomes to be established in the new land and water plan are able to be achieved.
Yes, that's correct. And that's hence why in these new provisions the recommendation is to have them time-bound to essentially the life of the new land and water plan.
Now you go on your evidence to describe the new rule in your paragraph 10, and you set out there a series of bullet points which I understand seeking to pick up on the matters that you are seeking to cover in the matters of discretion in the RDA rule.
Yes, that's correct.
Over on page 3, the top bullet point there refers to the extent to which the supply is used for purposes other than drinking water is to be a matter of discretion. Now, when you think about that as a concept through the lens of the policy framework in Plan Change 7, how is it that the Regional Council, when processing an application, would exercise its discretion? What's the policy outcome that it would be seeking to achieve in that regard?
I would probably come back to the objective itself. It is seeking the transition, essentially, in short, implementation of Te Manawai Te Wai. So, as I outlined previously, that places the human health needs, translate to drinking water, translate to community water supplies, above the third tier uses. So, that is that the purpose of that is to ensure that those third tier uses aren't, if I use the term, mixed with the true purpose of what this rule is meant to encompass, which is solely community water supply.
But therein lies perhaps the problem and or the challenge with accommodating community water supplies is that they are used for a range of uses, including tier three uses.
Yes, that's correct, and I think that is going to be the issue which I imagine we'll be getting to with regard to the definition, because everything hangs off that in terms of its breadth and degree of specificity. My starting point was the prior version in the JWS of April. I've hopefully narrowed it, taking into account the feedback from the court and others at my last attendance. But I think still the fundamental difficulty here is that it's just the breadth across the Otago region of communities. It's not like a municipal supply as you would with just solely a large centre. There is a definitional challenge.
And so there could be some significant challenges with seeking to exercise a discretion in terms of the uses to which water is put.
I've endeavoured to reduce or minimise those as far as I can through the wording and the definition.
Well, let's have a look at the definition which you have included helpfully at your paragraph 11. Now, when you look at the range of uses which are included in that definition, would you accept that the range of uses is very broad?
It is, but then again, I would look at, well, what guides a community, what goes into a community, or for what use is drinking water used in a community? And when I look across the RMA documents, you know, the MPSUD, with its definition of well-functioning urban environments, isn't solely residential households. I mean, that's a given. Where the the frayed edge of the definition steps in is in two places. One where you get external connections into essentially an urban supply, and both Ms McGuire and Ms Muir outlined how that works in some of the smaller communities. I think I have tried to endeavour some of the more obvious ones, such as references to amenity irrigation, which, you know, clearly is not a form of commercial irrigation. The other thing that I also endeavoured to do, Mr Moore, which I must say I haven't alerted to in the my evidence, was in the definition section. I refer to the copy that's attached to my evidence, appendix one, and I don't have the page number. It's page 10 of the amended version of PC7, but I also thought, I mean, this is just a general thing, is to have it at the outset preceding the definitions is just simply a thing around this, some of the interpretation. If it's a defined term, go to the RMA or the relevant higher order document, or else head to the, I guess, the Oxford Dictionary or thereabouts.
Well, let's square away that addition now, if we might.
Yep.
Have you done an analysis of the terms set out in Plan Change 7 as against the definitions in the National Planning Standards?
Solely drinking water.
That's the only term referred to in Plan Change 7. That's also referred to in the National Planning Standards. So I'll ask my question again.
Yeah, no, I got your question. I'm just pausing to recall. No, I haven't looked across the span of the document in that regard.
Have you looked at the definitions in the National Environmental Standards in terms of terms that might also be used in Plan Change 7?
I'm not aware of any that crossover. And I've also mentioned, as discussed, the National Policy Statement ones.
Isn't there a real danger in adding a phrase or a paragraph to the definition section like this without having carried out a comprehensive analysis of the relevant terms to see if they are in fact used in Plan Change 7?
It was myself focused in on community water supplies vis-a-vis drinking water, but that would have to be part of a, I do accept that would have to be part of a review or cross-check of the document. But having said that, given that PC7 is such a recent change, I would expect it to have picked up if there were any defined terms and be consistent with the National Planning Standard in particular.
Well, you've provided a specific definition for community water supply, and so if you're thinking about the issue around community water supplies, aren't we best just to focus on the wording there rather than introducing some new text in relation to definitions that might apply to other parts of Plan Change 7?
Well, yes. I mean, from my perspective, it was, I guess, as a drafting exercise, trying to assist. If it's of no assistance, then I'm pretty agnostic, frankly, about it. If it hinders and doesn't help, so be it.
Right, so back to the definition, and I had put to you that it appears very broad on its face in terms of the range of uses that are still included within it. Do you accept that proposition?
They are broad, but they still fit within what you would expect within a community that would receive drinking water.
And when you look at that definition as including or referring to water used for commercial, industrial or processing requirements, those would be tier three priorities in terms of the hierarchy of priorities in the NPS for freshwater?
I don't think it would be as clearly defined as that. If we look at tier two, the health needs of people, an institution includes a hospital, for example.
Well, I didn't say institutional.
Sorry,
I said commercial, industrial and processing.
Well, processing would include food processing, so I think the same would apply. Some processing would be of a purely, you know, for example, metal fabrication or the like, but at the other end of the spectrum would be food processing.
So a mixture then, perhaps, of Tier 2 and Tier 3?
Correct, and it would be challenging to unravel, I do acknowledge that.
And so, in a sense, the breadth of the definition is reflective of the range of uses to which water from community water supplies is put?
It is, and that's why the intensive drafting, redrafting the JWS version, is trying to, I guess, address it as one definition with a number of subsets and bundled together. The intent is to avoid, I guess, the uncertainty or breadth, which I think is more you're alluding to, and to step it through. Previously, it stated something along the lines of primary purpose of supplying drinking water. Well, now it's a water supply for the purpose of supplying drinking water to a community. So community, as I've mentioned further along in my evidence, I think it's just use the ordinary dictionary definition of a community. The second is the buy-in for a territorial authority. So that does tend to, or should exclude, I should say, purely commercial ones that have no linkage with a TA, either through a development agreement, you know, for the private provision of what is going to be future public infrastructure. We've got the list, as you mentioned, institutional onwards. And then to conclude it is essentially the only key metric of 25 or more people over 60 days. So what I sought to do based on the JWS version is, I guess, try and corral or provide a framework around the community water supplies that encompassed what I understood for the Otago region across the, you know, the breadth and scale of its communities is as inclusive as it should be and stops there. And that is, I do recognise that's a challenge.
So when you think about perhaps one of the examples that we have had some evidence on relating to the Clutha district and the community water supply there, do you have an understanding of the evidence given in that regard?
Sorry, which evidence?
The Clutha, Mr. Haller.
And for PC7?
Yes.
I'd have to recall, the commentary I recall was on Balclutha in Milton and a third centre.
So this is the cross-examination to do with the Stirling Bruce water scheme.
Oh, the Stirling,
yeah,
yes.
So 80-20 split, 80 rural, 20, yeah, or less than 20% residential. You recall that?
Yes, I do, and I recall my response to that as well, yes.
So when you think about that situation, so it's a community water supply, it's how it had been referred to. How does that fit within this definition? Are you intending to capture that scheme through this definition?
From what I recall of the Stirling scheme, it's at that time when we discussed this last, we had the prior JWS definition with primary purpose, and we ended up with, you know, broadly speaking, the 80-20, and 20% seemed to be for community water supplies and 80% irrigation. So my response at that time was it wasn't community water supplies, if I recall correctly, and that response will be the same today.
I think, to be fair, it's deer, sheep, washdown and something else.
Something else, yes.
Stock water, dairy sheep.
Yes, thank you. I recall now.
I don't think we were told of any irrigation in there. But
yeah, correct. Yeah.
So So when you read this definition, it's your intention that a scheme, as in that example, is not captured by the definition?
That would be my intent, yes.
Do you see that there is a risk it might be captured by the definition because one of its purposes is providing the supply of drinking water?
I guess this is where when you remove the word primary, even though it's a sort of a evaluative aspect to it, to a definition, that would actually in this case probably have strengthened it with regard to excluding the likes of Stirling. But I still think it's arguable that it is not a community water supply.
So at your paragraph 13, you note the breadth of the scale of communities in the Otago region, and then you say, whilst excluding water takes for other purposes. I'm interested in the very last part of that sentence as to how this definition is excluding water takes for other purposes.
Simply, as I said before, through this definition with a number of factors bundled into it. So you can see the bullet point above on the same page, a community. So it would, by that I reference above, a water take for a commercial industrial use, for example, would not be a community per se. So it would not be a supply, even though it may be treated to the same standard as community drinking water.
It's so not can you say that again?
Just to traverse over that again. Mm. So Mr. Moore asked how would it exclude water takes for other purposes, which I conclude my paragraph 13. Mm. My response to that, Your Honour, is, as one example, is if you look above, you are still looking at within a definition of what a community is. So it would exclude, say, a purely commercial use that may meet the metric of the numbers of folk, 25 or more people, 60 days a year, etc. I'm endeavouring to try and confine or ring fence as best I can within the scope of the JWS. But right.
So were you like water supplied? Just say it's for a municipal commercial purpose.
Yeah.
You were endeavouring to exclude that because it's to an individual, or where are you going with this?
But well, communities are generally predominantly of an urban urban nature.
Yeah.
So in other words, it's one pipe from the take, reticulated through the network to a range of end users, which could include as you mentioned. Mm. That's part of the community water supply.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is that if it's a standalone use, perhaps a dairy factory or the like, then it wouldn't fall within this definition.
So let's stay with one of those commercial uses. If the water was being taken from the municipal supply, it would fit within your definition, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
And so, insofar as you say in your evidence that you're excluding water takes for other purposes, it's not really achieving that outcome, is it, if the water's supplied through the municipal scheme?
If it's putting the uses side by side, so community water supplies alongside rural irrigation, or as said, a standalone industrial use, then it is achieving that purpose because they're clearly severable. But this, the challenge here is a community water supply will go into, in most cases, an urban environment, mm-hmm. which includes both business and housing, and in some cases institutions, as I mentioned, which do, for the health needs of people, do need, you know, potable water.
Sorry, just on that last example, is Milton Prison, which is a standalone institution south of the city, is that how would you regard the supply there as being captured by this definition or standing apart from this definition?
Well, I guess it's a community, so yes.
Even though it's in the middle of the rural area surrounded by cows, but because it is, it's not actually in Milton Township.
Yes, correct, but also if it was not a prison, it could be some other urban use, a village, for example, or something like that. It will have folk residing there, living there, and the health needs of people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Another way of tackling it is to perhaps ask, who did you intend to exclude, and then test the definition that way. Who's not caught?
I agree. That might be actually
more useful too.
More useful. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah.
Who's not caught?
Thank you. So
who's not caught, and why are they not caught?
Oh, right. Okay. So what isn't caught? Would be, for example, uses which are predominantly for rural irrigation, for example, or for commercial extractive uses, and I mentioned, for example, a dairy factory or the like.
Who else? Who are you intending not to capture? Or what else are you intending not to capture?
Yeah, I'm endeavouring to not capture those which are fair and square in the Tier 3 category, but have no nexus, if I can call it that, with Tier 2. In other words, they're not reliant on a supply of water to meet the health needs of the people that where this activity is located.
Of where the activity is located.
Yeah. So a grouping or cluster of people, I use another example, an airport, a commercial proposition, as distinct from an equivalent number of people residing in the same location, but the use is no longer an airport. It's a small settlement. One is community and one isn't. But what I'm always endeavouring to do is to come back to Te Mana Rotowai and try and, through a definition like this, draw a line between the Tier 2 and Tier 3.
Hmm. So Milton Prison is captured because there's a community of people who are residing at Her Majesty's pleasure.
Correct, yes. They
are Milton.
They have certainty of their term there,
yes.
I might say, yes.
But you're saying an airport like at Momona is not captured, even though people need to drink water, people who are working there need to drink water, but Milton Airport wouldn't be captured.
I think a line has... Airport. Yeah, well, this reflects the Tier 2, the two tiers of the MPS, and that's what I'm trying to... It will result in these sorts of distinctions needing to be made between the health needs of people versus social and economic well-being under Tier 3.
So if I was a dairy farmer, for example, producing milk and with a requirement for water, whether it's irrigation, stock water, or dairy shed washdown, I both would need water to provide for my own personal needs on farm. I am both industry as well as providing for food security for this country and for overseas. So I'm arguably tier two. So arguably all of dairy is a community, you know, supply to dairy is captured by your definition, but it's not what you intended.
No, and that situation possibly might be a little bit more straightforward in terms of the domestic component of that would be under section 14.3, and then the rest of it is, is consistent with the existing plan. It's water for dairy sheds, dairy uses, washdowns, and the like.
They're all looking at you because you at the moment everyone's looking at you, Mr. Moore.
Oh, I see.
Waiting for your next question.
I should say something then. Yeah. Or not, says Lizzie.
Anyway, so sounds like it's stunningly hard to think of a good definition which somehow excludes, you're not actually excluding the people that you say you're excluding.
I acknowledge that, and I did look for want of help or guidance, I looked across all of the definitions I could find across the breadth of the country, be it community water supplies, municipal supplies, or the like. Mm. And they're all relative, respective shades of grey. And in fact, I think in my last price supplementary, I included probably one of the better ones, which was the Waikato Regional Plan one.
Yeah.
So
isn't the reality of the situation that you simply can't distinguish between Tier 2 and Tier 3 priorities in the light of the range of uses to which community water supply water is put?
I don't think it's as absolute as that, Mr. Moore. I think there's the key reason I'd say that is we don't have written down a definition, but there is the references, I should say, and the wording is slightly different throughout the existing water plan. So there is a body of practice out there, and we saw with Ms. Muir and Ms. McGurr's evidence examples of water permits which do reference back to community supplies or the references to the consent. So It's not a novel or new situation. It's been generated here by PC7. I think the challenge here is that we're seeking to codify something that previously has probably no one's no one's ever had to look at it with the rigor of actually trying to specifically define what it exactly is.
So my question was, is it simply not possible to distinguish between Tier 2 and Tier 3 uses in the context of community water supplies?
As I said, it's with... The issues that you're raising potentially could be outliers because, as I say, the definition has... terms such as this have been in place both in Otago and in other regions, albeit different wording. We've got an MPS which does require delineation between these two tiers. So, as I said previously, it was there was no MPS, so it's probably no great imperative to actually pin down what is actually the health needs of people vis-a-vis everything else. Now we have to.
There's no requirement, though, to put community water supply into a single box or a single tier, being the Tier 2 under the NPS. I put it to you that perhaps that's too difficult a task here in terms of the range of uses to which these community supplies are being put.
Yeah, I think in a practical sense that the majority of the health needs of people and the majority of people live in urban or urban-type environments is actually through the supply of potable drinking water. So it just circles back to the needs of the most.
But when you think about what you're trying to capture in this definition, in a sense, you're trying to capture the full range of uses to which the water is put when taken from the scheme.
That's correct, yes.
So in a sense, when you start to think about what's excluded, really the only things that in your mind you are seeking to exclude are, I'll describe it as uses beyond the urban boundary, so into the rural uses, so irrigation use.
Yes, or uses with no connection with a community.
And you don't think farmers think they reside in a community, even though they're spatially distant?
Oh, well, as a social construct, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole region is a community. But
so what's your construct of community? I know it's defined by numbers of people, but is it a spatial construct?
Or it is, Your Honour, it is a spatial construct, because it's ultimately a resource management document we're working with. And it's easiest to delineate spatially between an individual use, such as a station, a farm, with domestic needs which can be met under section 14.3, but the majority of the water use is for rural irrigation or the like, versus a community in so far as it's a township, city, village, or the like, an urban environment.
Or settlement, if we're living in Canterbury, we talk about settlements.
Or settlement, yes, or any of those terms, which is principally a conglomeration of people. And I think that comes back to, as I said before, to meet the health needs of people, then the nature of how that is met is through a community water supply, because it's simply that is a construct for all of the infrastructure, including the reticulation, the means of treating water, and the like, and that's essentially the that's what it is.
So, in a sense, the definition is seeking to reflect the reality of the situation, that there is a broad range of uses to which the community water supply water is put.
As end uses, yes, it will be broad.
And that breadth of uses, when you think about the range of uses within an urban context, clearly straddles tiers 2 and 3 in the NPS. When you think about the use of that water for commercial purposes and industrial purposes that don't relate to the health needs of people.
That's correct. The nature of not the take of water, but its conveyance, the reticulation, the treatment, everything. It just makes the challenge is distinguishing purely between your end uses.
So it's the practicalities that are driving the definition in reality here, because the uses just can't simply be separated in terms of how the schemes are plumbed.
That's correct. And that comes back to the linkage to the infrastructure. So it's the reticulation network, and hence comes back to the spatial construct that is usually a settlement, township, city. They're the more understandable and easily defined ends of the spectrum.
So that being the case, we simply proceed on the basis that the breadth of the definition necessarily needs to include both Tier 2 and Tier 3 uses.
I think... it still remains at tier two because of this drinking water. The predominant use, again, is to residential uses. It's health needs of people.
I was going to suggest maybe uses are irrelevant. So not to focus on the use, but to focus on meeting... it is to meet the health needs of people who are living within a... who have a spatial relationship to one another within a community. So it's not the Ida Valley or the Matahitikia Valley or any of the tributaries. Yeah. So maybe the thing is, maybe we'll get further if we don't look at use and perhaps focus on the health needs of people, perhaps focus on some of the older definitions, which I know in your first evidence you did refer to, which was, human consumption, food processing, hygiene, and I forgot what else was on the list. You had a number of things on the list, and that's what it's about.
Yeah.
And it gets too difficult beyond that. Well, it gets muddled, beyond that, because if you are providing uses for everything, then there's a debate as to how long you should have that water, where everything's in flux in terms of the availability of water or even the water quality that you're looking at in some of your existing schemes.
Mm. Yes, and it's a classic policy conundrum of the amount of work and effort to capture the residual 5%. Like an all-encompassing definition.
Mm.
I won't be pinned on exact numbers, but 95%, for argument's sake, is really understood in terms of tier two, because it's folk living in urban environments, predominantly in a residential situation. But as you further step out towards the edge, it gets more difficult because you've got uses which potentially fit better with, if they were standalone, they would clearly be tier three rather than fitting within tier two, but they are part of the bundle of uses in a particular settlement or other urban environment.
But with the idea of folk living within community, predominantly for residential uses for human consumption, you say as you get towards the edges, but it's at the edges where the council can at least exercise a discretion. If that edge looks like 80% dairy shed washed down and cattle, and there's not enough water in the scheme, then the council can say no, but you can have your 20%, which is actually needed for various communities out in the Stirling Bruce area. Is that a better way to go? If you know what the core is meant to be, the edge then becomes the discretion, particularly if we're in a water short catchment or a catchment which does not have good water quality, which I think there's some evidence about.
Great.
I don't know.
You mentioned a figure a moment ago where, say, 95% of the water is used for a tier two purpose. Where are you deriving that percentage from?
I possibly may have caught myself before with a caveat straight after saying that. I don't have any fixed viewpoint. It's just truth to tell, the back of my mind, I've got a bell-shaped curve. And what I'm endeavouring to express, Mr. Moore, is the fact that in any form of policy development, it is a bell-shaped curve, and it's dealing with the outlier edges, and that's where the challenge lies in ensuring the definitions such as this are as defined as they can be, and they can't be 100%. I don't think it's just the reality of it.
let's move on beyond the definition. We may come back there, but we'll see. Next subject I wanted to discuss with you was the topic covered in paragraph 14 and 15 of your evidence.
Yeah.
And I'm staying with your most recent supplementary of 12 May.
Thank you.
And in here you are discussing answering the question in relation to the use of water. And in answer to the question 4, immediately above your paragraph 15, you note that it's not the end user who receives water from the consented supply, it's not that use being assessed. Have I understood your evidence correctly in that regard?
Yes, correct. So it's the supply of water to another person. It's also partly derived from, well, what is actually water? So it's not, you know, it's gone through a reticulator system. Yeah.
So if I've understood this part of your evidence correctly, applications lodged under the operative water plan, in your opinion, the end use of the water by the end user is not a matter which can be taken into account?
I think what I'm saying here is that the application and the permit when granted is in most cases by a territorial authority for a community water supply. That's the end, that's the use in terms of the permit. Who the actual recipients of that water who connect into that network that the territorial authority has consented is separate. So hence my response was A.
And so any potential effects on water quality associated with the uses so enabled would not be taken into account?
They would be on the basis of the actual end use itself. And I think I lost myself in my evidence, but there was I think I referred elsewhere to end uses which require specific discharge permits. Industrial trade activities, I think, was the example I gave in that regard.
It's only a small subset of end users or uses which might require such a permit.
That's correct, but probably the primary recipient of a community water supply, the output would be wastewater treatment plant, which would have its own discharge consents, as you'd expect.
So you're saying where a recipient requires a discharge permit, that recipient, the end use, the effects of the end use may be a relevant consideration?
For the take of water for community water supplies?
Yes.
No, because I think the nexus is broken once the drinking water has the take and the use is for community water supply. So the take is from the source. The use is the community water supply system itself. The end use where the recipient of that water is a separate use. And as I said before, that collectively, if it's the majority of households, it will go eventually into a wastewater treatment plant, perhaps get discharged to ground, just through things like cleaning cars or the like, which, within the PA standards in a water plan, or it may go to a industrial use, which, depending on the triggers and thresholds in the plan, would require its own discharge permit. So what I'm saying is that when a TA applies for a take of water for community water supplies, it's not necessarily turning its mind as to the discharge or the effects on the environment of the uses that rest within that community specifically, because a number of them would be directly managed under the other quality provisions in the water plan or a plan.
To move on now to paragraph 25. And somewhere towards the middle of that paragraph, you note that whilst the health and wellbeing of waterways is to be provided for as a first priority, I do not consider this to be the total exclusion of all other water needs. Now, I'm interested in your understanding of how the three priorities work within the NPSFM. Is it your opinion that if there is only sufficient water available in a water body to sustain the health and wellbeing of that water body, that some of that water must also then be used for the second order priority?
If the situation is such that there is absolutely no other alternative to ensure the Tier 1 priority is addressed, then the NPSFM is very clear. It is the Tier 1 only.
That's somewhat inconsistent with the way you've described that in your evidence, though.
I think in most cases it would never occur, and that it's actually the allocatory tussle at Tier 2 and Tier 3 level. That's the, probably going to be the issue, because I'm not aware that there's an actual percentage figure for the Otago region of Tier 2 takes versus what would fit into Tier 3, whoever you can define it. But across the country, I have seen, or I understand, I should say, from MFE documents that the percentage take that goes into rural irrigation is a primary one, I think 75-80%. So the situation, Mr. Moore, I don't think actually arises. It's more between the Tier 2 and Tier 3 issue in terms of priority.
So you're not saying that you would perhaps need to balance Tier 1 and Tier 2 to ensure that water was available for a Tier 2 use?
At that absolute end of the scale, no, because the NPS is very clear on that.
And in the context of seeking a source for a community water supply, if there was simply insufficient water available to meet Priority 1 and Priority 2, then a different source may need to be sought.
That's correct. So that would be analogous to how you would, at the outset, it's a constraints-based planning. So. And that's actually reflected also in the MPSUD, and I think I reference somewhere in my evidence the fact that you have to consider the same for climate change or the like. So there may well be locations where it's not smart to either extend or develop a new urban environment because of the environmental background.
So when you're thinking about the Otago region and the need to, over the next 6 years, establish the framework that recognises how much water needs to be left in water bodies to meet the first order priority, it's important that water is then not allocated for Tier 2 or Tier 3 uses before Tier 1 has been provided for, isn't it?
If you're suggesting it as a sequence, I think it's more a case of understanding what is needed for Tier 1 But as is the whole nature of PC7, it is a transition, and so you won't have the complete answer the day the plan is notified. But within the 10-year term of the new plan, you will have the ability to either, well, review. Presumably the new plan will have a Section 68.7 clause in it, rule in it, or it will fall back onto the standard Section 128. Or alternatively, as I'm suggesting this rule package, the duration for community water supplies is time bound to within the life of the plan. So that's the end. At that end point, then yes, I'd accept that, Mr. Moore.
I wonder whether we might now discuss the provisions.
Sure.
And my first question relates to the text inserted on page Roman 4, where you have inserted some additional text to capture that the shift that Plan Change 7 or Chapter 10 will also apply to applications for new takes for community water supply.
Yes, that's correct. As a consequential to the rule provisions.
Sorry, I didn't actually catch that. Which provision are you on?
It's the explanatory text on page Roman 4. Yep. And that, to be clear, is the change where you are signalling that all new takes for community water supply are to be processed exclusively under Plan Change 7?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, in terms of the carve-out, if I can describe it using that phrase, to the policies, you've simply added the change in relation to consent duration to policies 10A 2.2 and 10A 2.3.
That's correct. And as a matter of drafting, I've endeavoured to follow as close as I can the original notified version of PC7.
Yes. And that's picking up on the expiry date for community water supplies, being 31 December 2035.
That's correct, yes.
And then just tracking through, you have made an addition to the note at the commencement of the rules.
That's correct, as a consequential, yes.
And again, that is drawing the users of the plan's attention to the fact that new takes will now be processed under...
That's correct, yes.
..for community water supplies will be processed under...
Yes.
..Chapter 10.
Yeah.
And then we get to the principal mechanism by which community water supplies are to be provided for, and that's in a new standalone restricted discretionary activity rule which you've set out as a new rule 10A 3.1A.2.
Yes.
Just before we get to that point, though, you've recommended a deletion from the previous restricted discretionary activity rule.
Yes, that's essentially so that, again, I'd classify that as a consequential, so that the community water supplies is in one rule set.
Right, I just want to work through in a little detail the RDA rule that you have recommended, just to test whether it is doing what you are intending it to do. So when I read the entry conditions, that's entry condition A is picking up on the new permits, so any new permit to take and use freshwater.
Yes, that's correct. So A, B and C are a restatement essentially of the objective.
And then, and so limiting their application, its reference at the end of subparagraph C to community water supply, where the reference or the restriction of this rule would be captured.
That's correct, yeah. So hence the definition that we've discussed.
And then we move on to the... Now, these are further entry conditions. Is that how you would describe A, B, C and D that then follow?
Yes, I would. And that is a drafting construct is to maintain consistency with the preceding RDA rule.
Now, you've cross-referenced conditions 2, 5 and 7 from the previous rule.
That's correct. So the distinction between that and the prior RDA one is obviously one is omitted, which is the duration limited to 6 years. So it's and then the 3 onwards, they've been one. For example, number 3, irrigation is not relevant to community water supplies, so hence it's not a entry condition.
Sorry, I stopped listening.
Oh, sorry, apologies. That's all right.
No, I see the clock's disappeared off the off the screen.
I must say I've got arrow straight line of sight.
There we go.
I can repeat that, but it's just basically the entry conditions brought over are those that I deem relevant for community water supplies, if I can leave it at that.
Very good. Right, I'm particularly interested in the matters of discretion and how they might operate and or be exercised by the council. So starting with the first matter of discretion, whether the water meter data in combination with other relevant methods and data, as agreed with council, accurately represents historical use. Now, that how is that to be interpreted in the context of an application for a new permit?
It won't be relevant.
And so could the drafting be improved there to recognise that matter and possibly a couple of the others which follow are only relevant when replacing an existing permit?
Yes, and as a drafting better placed under sub E for replacement consents. So that would be a drafting improvement.
Now, I feel obliged to ask you about the phrase as agreed with council.
and I would respond by saying I've faithfully adopted the existing provision, so hence if this can be a consequential change.
And you'd have no objection to that phrase being deleted?
I'd have no objection to that phrase being deleted.
Moving on to matter of discretion B, likewise, that applies to existing.
Yes, so that can... and then C is the is a universal matter for discretion. Onwards, C and D.
Now, I am interested in C on the basis of understanding how that matter of discretion might be exercised in light of the policies and the objective in Plan Change 7. So how is it that a consent officer might go about applying or exercising discretion in regard to the matters set out in your paragraph C? And perhaps we might start by you describing or explaining what is it you are seeking to capture and see what was the outcome you were intending to pursue, achieve.
I think it comes back to the need to clearly delineate or ring fence around this, the scope of this rule being solely for community water supply. So it's mostly just a more definitional thing. Is it what they say it is? Is it for a community water supply?
Right, so in a sense, provided the uses fit within the well, it becomes a little circular, doesn't it? Because to get into the rule in the first place, you've got to meet the definition.
Correct.
And so I guess I'm struggling to understand what in addition is C seeking to capture.
I thought it appropriate that the ORC has some discretion to decline in situations where the proposal demonstrably is not a community water supply, but may have small elements of it, for example.
Just pick on that. There may be some small elements of it. Can you just tease that out?
It's this, the extent to which is the supply is used for purpose other than drinking water, rather than is the supply used or not used for drinking water. So there isn't a value to that aspect there as a matter of discretion.
And
part of the challenge, I think, is because I have ringing in my ears the argument that all water is treated to a drinking water standard. All water that is supplied is drinking water, therefore the council intends to supply drinking water, even if it's going to be sucked by a cow. That's the difficulty, because we've got this sort of broader legal thing which is sitting there, and if you like, it's kind of querying the pitch a little bit, perhaps in terms of where you want to go. But I'm not entirely sure I know where you want to go yet. Yeah.
I think it would be completely circular if it referred to community water supply, because it would loop you back to the purpose of the rule. But the key component of the definition is drinking water. And again, if it's in a situation where the end use is not by or for a territorial authority, under the Health Act or the Local Government Act, there's a number of sort of checks which ensure that the supply is for that specific purpose, for a community water supply. And it seemed to me that the key determinant of that is a supply for the purpose is for drinking water. And that seemed to me as a matter of discretion, which would enable the ORC to distinguish between what is community water supply and what isn't. I was trying to find a sort of a switch between one or other.
So I put to you the logic of the legal argument, as I understood it to be. Do you accept that all water that is treated to a drinking water standard and that is supplied by territorial authority is drinking water, or is intended to be supplied as drinking water? I think my first logic was set out more clearly, but all water supplied by a territorial authority is drinking water, because all water is treated to a drinking water standard. That's the logic. There's a logic argument here. You've got the logic argument, and which may or may not be the same in terms of where you're driving to.
Yeah.
So if you're inviting us to put that logic out of our minds, the legal argument out of our minds, now focus on where you're going. I think the difficulty is I can't separate out what I've been told. You're saying one thing, but council, is not unreasonable. You're also putting up a legal argument.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they're... Are they intention or not intention? I don't know, but I'm having difficulty separating them and therefore finding out where you want to go with this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all I can say is that I'm trying to reserve in the OIC if this rule came into being, a way to distinguish where you get either an application for a take, which may be asserted as a community water supply, but looked at in the round, isn't. Mm. And the wording I arrived at C is essentially just a way of trying to address that.
Might there be another way you might look at this? Can you see any alternative possibilities in the light of the discussion that's been going on?
Well, nothing immediately springs to mind, but I'd have to say that yes, there could well be other ways of addressing this. But it comes back to as Your Honour asked, why have C? As I understand it, is to simply to give the ORC the ability to differentiate between what is put forward under this rule, which has the benefit of a longer term than the 6-year duration for other uses, other takes, and that seemed to be the one way of addressing that. The extent to which the supply is used for purposes other than drinking water. So it's a it does come back into what is the primary purpose of the application? What is it for?
So I was just wondering some of those other phrases that have been used in other definitions and documents in terms of human consumption and human health and hygiene and those sorts of things, whether they might be a little bit more informing of what's meant.
They could well be if it's the extent to which, as to use your example, Commissioner, the extent to which the supply is used for human consumptive purposes, full stop.
I suppose the advantage of C is that it indicates that there is a fallacy to the logic argument. In other words, even though water is treated to a drink water standard and it is supplied by territorial council, it may not actually be for that purpose. It gives the lie, if you like.
When you're thinking about C and you're thinking about what the council might do, so exercising its discretion, did you have it in mind that if the extent to which the supply was being used for purposes other than drinking water was, let's say, significant, but still community water supply, it fits within the definition, that were you anticipating that the council might grant a consent but with lesser rate or volume than had been applied for? Or are you...
That could potentially be the case.
And might it be the case that it might be a shorter duration as well?
I think that would be... you essentially have to unbundle the consent in that case because you'd have one... I mean, again, with the nature of the system being is that it has one take going into one system. So if you do have other uses, then you'd have to find some way of unbundling the... And that's going to be difficult when it literally is one take into one network.
So what are you saying in terms of C then, that it's always only ever going to be... You can't unbundle the uses, so you're back to the beginning, which is that you could never test the purposes.
What I'm saying is that it's what is the actual take for the extent to which the supply is used for purposes other than drinking water. So the intent there is, well, what is it? What is it for? What is as a matter of discretion? Mm. And it could enable situations where, again, just coming into percentages without being definite on this, if 95% of it is for community water supplies, but there's a residual 5% which isn't, then the OIC would have the discretion, if it wished, to grant consent under this control as a community water supply.
Following the logic.
No.
You would have discretion to grant consent, but you could reduce the take in volume because that 5% wasn't required for community water supply, or you'd say...
No, what I'm saying is that it's the extent to which the supply is used for purposes other than drinking water. So if it's 95%... for drinking water, and 5% is for other purposes, then putting aside rates or volumes, the OIC will still have the discretion to grant consent under this rule.
Mm.
Or it may decline. It may say that it needs to be 100%.
Mm-hmm. Or it may just go, don't worry about the 5, we'll give you 100%. Probably time for a cup of tea whilst we just pause there and think about this a bit further. I'm just wondering if this is just all far too difficult. And there's a distinction to be made between existing uses and new applications. Because I thought what happens next across the country, but in Otago, especially with Otago, especially in mine, is that the three MPSs, MPS for fresh water, for urban development, for electricity, renewable electricities, will be brought in phase, if I could put it that way, brought in phase under the RPS and under the regional plans and under the plans of the territorial authority, which is the district plans and other plans developed pursuant to the LTA and plans required under the MPS for UD. So it's about planning at the moment. It's about bringing all of those documents in phase.
Yeah.
So there may be an argument if you want to invest in new water for a 6-year consent, because the planning horizon at the moment is quite uncertain. But there may be an argument because of the investment to date, the in-ground investment, that those can be rolled over for a longer period. I don't know. I mean, that seems to me to be the simpler way forward than, because here we're dancing on the head of a pin, and I just don't think we're gonna get there, because you've both got the planning argument, and then over the top of it you'll have a legal argument. You can actually hear the legal argument coming down the line, which will rob, I think, what you're trying to achieve here. But but in saying that, I'm not entirely clear yet who you would exclude if you were to exclude anyone. So I'm just wondering if this is all too difficult, that there's other ways to recognise the sunk cost of existing TA infrastructure, which is predicated on the continuation of water by this plan, and everything else is to wait for the planning regime to come in phase.
Because it comes back to the reality that the TAs are a creature of statute, and they have statutory drivers under Local Government Act to have infrastructure plans and financial plans and long-term plans stretching out 10 to 30 years. And as they have indicated, their evidence, the 6-year term of a consent cuts across that, in their their view. This essentially endeavours to recognise the fact that we are stepping toward a new integrated management regime, with at the forerunner of that being the new land and water plan, which will give effect to the suite of MPSs that are out there. And the key rationale here is to, as I mentioned last time, is have it two sides of the ledger. One, to give them a longer term, but within the life of the new land and water plan. The other side of the ledger is around efficiency and effectiveness of that supply, and those are the matters which are outlined further down in the water management plan. And that's essentially the ethos or rationale of this. But myself and others, the other planners involved through the joint witness statement process, we've all acknowledged how challenging it is to actually pin down and accurately define what the community water supply is when you're looking at 100% exclusion of other uses or purposes. And what I'm saying is I don't think you can actually get there with it. You can get most of the way there, but that's just the nature of a definition. I mean, as I said before, it's a policy conundrum that you can't, in this case, pin down exactly what is and isn't community water supplies to 100%. There'll always be a shade of grey at either end of the bell-shaped curve.
And so that, maybe it is easier that you don't don't have provisions with lists, because it will always be one outside the list which will be the troublesome one when it comes to consent application.
Yeah.
So maybe it's better not to go in that direction. But there's a lot of value in what you say here for replacement consents later on. I thought just simply because of what you say is the, I've forgotten how you put it, but sort of an absence of rigour under the water plan in terms of territorial authorities justifying the water that they require, particularly in relation to growth. It's very
correct.
Loose.
Yes. Yes.
And I've seen that. And so there's, and I think also very loose in terms of, the drive for consumers to be efficient or to conserve water, and you're working on that here. So I can see a lot of value of what you say, particularly for existing. I'm just not sure about. I'm not sure about the replacement where, we've got three MPSs out of phase in this region, and where we've got a clear direction through in terms of, the planning to come. The other thing that I'm really worried about is, I think it was Ms. McGuir, was it Ms. McGuir yesterday? Your witness?
Ms. Muir.
Yeah.
Ms. Muir yesterday.
Yeah.
She said it would be intolerable, I think was her word, intolerable to a district council to have its consent conditions reviewed. Well, that's pretty serious. And the reason I thought that was because you have your consent, you build your infrastructure, the built infrastructure reflects the terms and conditions of your consent. So if you are changing the allocation or the rate of take or something in relation to the water, such that it may become less reliable, well, the built infrastructure may be predicated, on a different water regime under the conditions. I thought was probably what she's driving to. It's what all farmers are driving in as well, in terms of the risk to come. But I'm sure she said intolerable. Now, that's worrying if it's intolerable in terms of, permits, longer-term permits. That is just frankly worrying. If you're asking for a 15-year consent and you know things may change, it's less clear for drinking water, which is actually consumed by humans, but if there's change in the offing or uncertainty at least, I think that's a worry.
Well, yes, and I listened to the the recording. I didn't.
I didn't pick that.
It wasn't there, of course. But,
No. Well, I might have picked it up wrong, but I picked up my ears and I thought, heck.
All I can say with that, actually, I've got Ms. Muir's evidence sitting there, is the fact that she attaches the permits, which all, as far as I can recall, all have Section 128 review conditions attached to them. So that may just simply be the nature of her knowledge and her role within the council.
It is a valid concern to have, though, if you've got built infrastructure predicated on a certain volume and rate and take.
Correct.
And then the ground rules change or potentially change, or perhaps they can't change because of the nature of the take. But anyway, leave it there. Have afternoon tea. Speaking for myself now, I think there's two different cases. I think there's a case for the existing, and I think there's a case for new. And I think I'm not sure we're going to get anywhere by looking at a definition. It's just so complex, which you've acknowledged.
Yeah, that is a real...
It's not the issue. The issue is, how should this regional council be planning ahead of the, or responding on a consent-by-consent basis ahead of its, the MPS is becoming in phase with the RPS and all of the inferior documents therein.
All right. We shall take a break.
Okay. All rise.